Welcome to the 155 Election Podcast, interviews with candidates running for mayor, city council, and school board trustee in Hamilton, Ontario. Episode 128. Scott Duvall, you are running for city councilor in Ward 7. Welcome to the 155 Election Podcast.
Thanks, Joey, and I appreciate the invite, and I also appreciate seeing you again after many years of our absences, you know?
It has been a while. Firstly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm getting up there in age. I'm 66 years old. I'm a retiree from Stelco, Stelwire, after 35 years, and retired at an early age. Then I went into city council and politics, and I served 9 years there, and then went over as an MP for 6 years. And happily married after 48 years and have 3 beautiful daughters and a couple grandchildren.
Why are you running?
I'm running, Joey, mainly because I'm frustrated when I came back from Ottawa. Some of the things that have happened in the city at city council, I'm just not happy. And I'm not happy with some services that we used to depend on. And we no longer, put it this way, having trouble getting them back.
Do you live in Ward 7, yes or no?
Yes.
Does it matter if one lives in the community one seeks to represent?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't have really great feelings about it, but I think they should know the area well. I don't see somebody coming, and I'll use as an example, somebody from Ward 15 coming into Ward 6, 7, or 8 without knowing that urban area, and vice versa.
How have you contributed to your community and our city?
Well, I think I've done great things. As when I worked at Stelwire, as a union president, I was protecting pensioners when the company was going under CCAA. It was a bankruptcy. I was protecting not only the workers, but the pensioners. That's how I started. And then I came up along the ranks and started helping in the community by helping people with disabilities, getting some going back to the basics, getting our roads and sidewalks improved, doing charitable events, all kinds of little things. But I certainly think I've done well, especially in the labor movement, helping workers and the people with low incomes.
What are 3 skills you will bring to elected office that makes you the best choice to represent Ward 7 on Hamilton City Council?
3 choices? Well, experience is one, that's for sure. Being reachable and making sure that people are being heard and that voice goes back into City Council as a priority.
The following preamble leads to questions regarding honesty and transparency. Let's presume you are elected. During your first few weeks, you will be briefed regarding what City Hall refers to as confidential matters. We do not know what confidential matters are presently being withheld from the citizens of Hamilton. All 4 councillors first elected in 2018 initially voted to support the Coots Paradise cover-up, before 3 of the new councillors began voting against the continuing cover-up. The Municipal Act prohibits members of council from releasing information the majority of council declares confidential. With this in mind, what principles and advice will help you determine what information should be confidential and what information should be made public?
That's a very good question. The importance is the transparency. When it comes to legal matters or health and safety, something that's very important that should be out there to the public, I think should be heard very, very loud and clear. I know council goes into and they have to have the in-camera meetings, say for legal advice, but as an experienced person on council, I know there's many times I don't believe that we should have been in camera in the past. But what happened here is one thing, Joey, that I wasn't privy into those in-camera meetings, so I don't know what information they heard, and I don't know the private in-camera reports. So it's hard for me to make that determination, but when I found out about the sewage spill, I had to ask myself a lot of questions in my own head. How did it get 4 or 5 years without people acknowledging that there was a malfunction? The city does a lot of maintenance work, and we have to do that on a yearly basis. Are you telling me for 5 years nobody found out that this lock was broken? There's something is wrong in that category. But on the other one, I had to use my head of saying, okay, if the information was spilled to me, in private and in camera, one of the things I would say right off the bat that I learned in the labor movement, and we have health and safety laws, and one of the regulations states is that if a person is known of a safety violation that can hurt himself or others, you must report it. An action has to be taken. If you don't report it, then you can be disciplined, you can be discharged, serious consequences happen. I look at this in the same way. We're a business. A safety violation was not only critical to some of the people in that area, but to the public itself. And that should have been out there and not kind of saying, well, we have some litigation problems, or let's have an investigation and not say nothing until the province has their investigation. I think that is totally wrong. To me, I believe, and it's easy to say because it's hindsight and I wasn't there, but on something like that, it's critical to me and very, very important that lives could be at stake. I would have got up in that meeting and walked out and protested, knowing I can't say nothing, but made sure the public know I was protesting and I was going to no longer be part of that panel of discussions.
The Red Hill Inquiry will issue its report early in the next term of council. The revelations regarding how City Hall ignored problems on the expressway and the toxic culture at City Hall, which silenced good people, are shocking. How do you plan to review and consider the final inquiry report when the commission releases its findings and recommendations?
Well, I think that's a very easy. But first of all, you got to read the report to find out what the recommendations are and was certain people to blame, what people knew. So you got to read that very, very in depth. And to go in and start asking questions. But so if somebody was at fault, or they looked at it at fault, we got to take some serious consequences against those people. I'm dying to see the report. I'm very interested in this because if there was a cover-up, something has to happen. Now, most of those people have left. But I think my problem that I've heard so far, just from the news media, is that a report came out and the person in charge didn't like the report. So we spent maybe, $70,000-$80,000 on this? And because what was the sense of getting the report if somebody can overpower that? Does not make sense to me.
The construction of the B-Line LRT will begin during this term of council. It will be the largest construction project in Hamilton's recent history. How do you plan to respond to construction challenges and opportunities?
That is going to be a very difficult situation. I am for the LRT. I'm going to let you know that. I think it's one of the best things, and it's for our future, for making Hamilton, when it expands, that do we have the proper transit. However, to start that project is going to take massive planning. You have to work together. So whoever gets the construction company, the city has to be there, the people on the supervisors, the people overlooking the project, and the BIAs and the public should have meetings on a constant basis to find out where the slip-ups are or where are the problems that are still originating. I know, and I have some experience in this, when we did Concession Street on the mountain there, I had town hall meetings, and I went and worked with the BIA. Do you want to do it in 2 years? Do you want to do it in 1 year? And we did that whole strip. One of the things I found out that worked really good was the construction outfits and the City of Hamilton's senior staff worked so well with the BIA that they're actually taking where there was could be a safety problem, actually walking people across the street. Construction would halt, make sure that person got across safely, and made sure they had some barriers up there that nobody could slip and fall. So it's going to be dusty and it's going to be noisy. It is going to raise a lot of complaints, mainly from people that don't want to see the LRT to begin with and with the traffic holdups. But that happens in the construction. It happens almost anywhere. So I think working together to try to ease the problems going forward, everybody must work together on this one.
Before we turn to land use planning, let's have a lighter question. What is something interesting or unique within Ward 7 that you believe the rest of Hamilton should know about?
One of the best things that I like about Ward 7 is Inch Park. What we did with that since 2006 of making the first accessible park in Hamilton, and which Hamilton Challenger Baseball. And that used to be a hardball diamonds with mounds on it. And this organization who helps many, many people came to us because they never had a park to play in, or they needed more than one diamond. The organization has grown substantially. And if you come out on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night, you'll never have so much fun in your life when you see all these people that are either playing in wheelchairs or they have some kind of other challenge, that it is one great night, and that's what these people look for. And a lot of people don't know that in the City of Hamilton, that we were the first, and they even call it the home of the Challenger Baseball. It's growing, the fan base is growing, and people are having a lot of fun.
City Council decides land use planning and zoning. It decides where housing and businesses are located and the types of housing and businesses which are permitted in locations. There are two questions on this topic. The City of Hamilton is updating its outdated residential zoning bylaws. The zoning bylaws across Ward 7 are decades old and do not conform with the provincial policy statement, Ontario's de facto planning law. With outdated zoning, the City of Hamilton is unable to present a principled planning position in front of the Ontario Land Tribunal. The new zoning, if compliant with the provincial policy statement, will return local control over planning. What is your vision and how will you achieve it?
My vision is to make sure that planning policies is in the municipality control, not in the provincial government. We know what's going on. We are the ones that hears the residents. They don't. They sit in Toronto. They do some minister makes some kind of zoning order, just bypasses everything, everything was said. But we got to listen to all sides of the story. So if you know that Hamilton has just come out recently with a very strong voice of no rural expansion, and then we have the people that are critical of you got to build upwards, and then you have the people that are critical of having their area now changed over from, say, single residential homes now to triplexes or fourplexes. So it's a very difficult, touchy situation. If we're not going to have rural expansion, then we must get it in our heads that we have to go up. That's the only conclusion to that. The other problem that I'm having a big problem with, make single residential housing in the already established areas, allowing them to expand to a duplex or triplex, it gives me a lot of concern, and I'll tell you the reason why. When there was planning, it wasn't planning for an expansion of triplexes and fourplexes and whatever they're going to do. Parking is an issue. A lot of cars now are parking on the street because more families have more than one car. If you take a look down at Upper Gauge, most of those houses now are rentals. And guess where they're parking? On the front of the grass. You can go down there today and you'll see a lot of cars just parked there. There's no parking. And there's no parking in Upper Gauge, so then they go to the side streets if they don't have big enough lot. And then those people complain because they don't know who these people are, or the snowplow can't come down, or their streets doesn't get swept properly. So we have a serious problem if you're going to allow rental housing, making your residential single residential houses expanded into rental housing and have more people in there, then you better come up with an answer about what you're going to do for these problems. Because I think it's terrible that we can't get a sweeper down our street because somebody's got to park their car somewhere. I think it's terrible that we got to have snowplows come down and keep riding around, okay, because the cars are parked there. You better have some answers if you want to have all this little triplexes and little fourplexes in your area. You better have some answers, well, because it wasn't planned before like that. And if you're going to plan to do it now, you better have a plan to how you're going to fix these problems.
Large commercial plazas are converting into mixed-use mid-rise development. Already, there are two applications within Ward 7, the former Walmart Plaza at Upper Sherman and Mohawk, and the first phase of the Lime Ridge Mall redevelopment. There are many similar lands across Ward 7. Presently, there is no city planning policy specific to commercial to mixed-use redevelopment. What is your vision for this type of redevelopment, and how will you achieve that vision?
I think it's a great idea. When I was a councillor before, I knew about some of the stuff that was going to happen in Lime Ridge Mall, but it was going to happen on the other end when they started buying up the McDonald's and the gas station and all of that. But now I see it's going to be where Sears is. And I think it's great because we need housing, that's for sure. It's a large area. It's more commercial than it is anything right now. There is some residential, you know, to the back. But what can you ask for better, having a residential or an area like that that's commercial, making into some residential areas? The businesses will thrive in that area. They'll thrive off of those extra people coming into their little small little shops. I think it's great, and I think it's a good location. Now, how does this happen? You have to keep the public informed. You have to have town hall meetings. The people in that area and in surrounding areas, they could be very concerned about the amount of traffic that's now coming through their area, the whole works. They need to have answers. You just can't go and just start having plans without notifying the area residents of what's going to happen. So I think that would be very important to make sure that the residents of the area and, you know, the constituents are all notified and come up and try to come up with an agreement that they all work with.
Road safety is a significant issue in Ward 7, with numerous pedestrian deaths in recent years which have shocked and saddened the community. What is your plan to address road safety? Please provide three detailed specifics of your plan.
I think, Joey, some of the things that I've had the opportunity and the luxury of doing was going to visiting other cities and watching problems that we were experiencing in Hamilton and looking to see if they have the same problems what they're doing. I think scramble crossings would be a great start, especially in our busier areas where it's high traffic volume, pedestrian traffic, advanced green lights. And of course, we have this now, I believe, that already the school zones at 40 kilometers an hour, but we don't have the alertness of in all the areas about where that school zone is. It just dropped to 40 kilometers. And I'll say, so if you go on the main streets of Upper Sherman, you'll see those flashing red lights or flashing yellow lights. If you go to Upper Mohawk or on Mohawk Road, you'll see some flashing lights, but you won't see them around the residential areas. What gets me, okay, is, and I think you're going to see this coming, that there's a big push to reduce the speed limits down to 40 kilometers an hour everywhere. There's some talk back, we can't do this, you know, on major arterial roads, we can't do anything. Here's a way to save some money. I got an idea for the city of Hamilton. If you notice lately what is going on with these signs of down to reduce to 40 kilometers an hour, we got side streets that maybe only have three or four houses, and we got somebody's installed a post. 40 kilometers starts. You can't even get your car up to 50 kilometers an hour by the time you got to make a stop, and it says 40 kilometers end, okay? And it's on a lot of streets. There's a lot of money. These signs are very expensive. So if we're going to go that way, why don't we just make the law 40 kilometers an hour, okay, or unless otherwise posted. Right now we've got 50 kilometers an hour unless otherwise posted. So we can cut it with all this money with the signs, and everybody knows it's 40 kilometers. Whether they obey that or not, it's the same thing with doing 50. The amount of signs and the waste I see with these being installed is not doing any good to anybody. It's just a lot of money being wasted. And we know where we're going anyways. We're going to go to 40 kilometers an hour.
Turning to governance and expertise, let's use the idea that it takes 10,000 hours to master a skill or trade and apply to being a municipal councillor. One person cannot be an expert in all matters which come before council for decision. How will you gain the necessary learning to be able to make informed decisions? What reading do you do? What professional development will you look for? And what types of people will you seek advice from?
I love the question because it's very good. First of all, you got to make sure you got to be informed. You got to read the reports. You just can't go on there without just glancing at it. And if you do, and if you're going to speak to the issue, you better read it, because I'm kind of tired of what I was there, that people would repeat the same question the other councillors already asked. And it took up a lot of time. Read the report, be informed. And if you have questions, you either go to staff and you try to find out what they mean by this. You get some legal advice. And you go to other counselors and find out if it's a particular problem in their area, what are they experiencing too? Maybe another counselor's not experiencing that so much. So also getting information from the public, those are very, very important issues and items to retrieve, to get, to make that informed decision. Because when you do, you better justify how you made that. And that's what's important to the public.
What are two changes you will propose to improve city services?
First of all, I would think some of these city departments have to start working together. And I'm saying that is, we could do a street, say, for instance, of potholes. So you got a truck comes down there, does the potholes. 20 feet over, there's another pothole, but it's in a park. Park pothole doesn't get done until the parks department comes, okay? So I'm going, put the asphalt in there, take the picture, bill them for it. So this is happening right now in my own little area. Since December, I have been complaining about the amount of potholes. Took me three times, finally got it done, and I complained about the parking lot at the Lawfield Park. Two started off with normal-sized potholes. Now they're massive. They come down there and they did the street, some of it, left the other ones, and then disregard the park. Everybody drives in there. We got a lot of people, city vehicles that drive in and out of there. Why is this not being done? I have no idea. And it makes people mad because when it rains, people don't see and it's dark and they get this big thump, right? But so these departments have got to work together. We have weeds on the side of the street. So when we go into the park, they have the weed eaters, the weed whackers, and they start trimming and everything. The sidewalk's, 3 feet over, and you got these massive weeds, and we can't cut them because that's the roads department. Roads department doesn't have the machinery for it, apparently. So, we used to use pesticides. We can't do that anymore. That's understandable. But we just forget it. We just watch these weeds grow. So it makes it very difficult for people walking, trying to get onto that sidewalk, and it's an eyesore. I can't understand that we can send men to the moon, but we can't figure out a machine that whips these goddamn weeds down on the side. When you're trying to get out of your car, you're trying to get up on that edge of the sidewalk. Something has to be done. Departments have to start working together. And like I said, if it's parks that have all that equipment, and at least they should go around their own park, their own land, bill them. Bill the other people that's responsible for it. Or just saying, hey, make the trade-offs. Services like that have to be done. You just can't say, I'm in roads. That's nothing to do with me. I don't pick up the garbage. That's recycling. They pick up the garbage. Come on, let's start working together. On the park issue, we have a lot of worn out equipment, but one of the things is maintenance of some of our parks. Very little garbage cans. So then when people wonder why there's so much garbage, if it wasn't for the good citizens that we have, that some of them go out daily and actually pick up some of the garbage. But in the springtime, I noticed the parks. I know they're on a schedule to get cut, but usually by the long weekend, when the long weekend happens and get a nice little weekend, the parks aren't cut. The weeds or the grass is longer because it grows faster at that particular time. I think they got to be better maintained. And some of the equipment that, is out of date or out of use has to be looked at and fixed up. I look at the parks as a very vital use. I know over in Lawfield Park, we have a great park over there, all-purpose utility court. We have a track. We have a nice soccer field that hardly ever gets used. I couldn't believe it. We paid all that money, and then it's not even on the program for soccer players to use it. But we got football use of it now, so it's good. And there's many other parks. I mean, you got Sam Lawrence that has to be redone, just a beautification. But listening to people for their playground areas that they can take their child to that safely and done properly, I think is very, very important.
What are two changes you will propose to improve quality of life in Hamilton?
What's really important right now is transit and the roads. Something has to be done with our older infrastructure. We just can't keep putting Band-Aids on it. Transit is a serious problem here. And I'm saying not so much that I'm not saying that all Hamilton. I know like people downtown would like to see a faster service and more a time convenience service. But here in the mountain, we get terrible service. And we're paying the same amount of money as everybody else is. So I know the people down there want a faster service. If we could get 15-minute service, we'd be the most happiest people in the world. Right now, we get a half-hour service, if you're lucky, if you catch the other bus. And I'll give you an example, Joey. My daughter uses the transit all the time. She does not drive. She can go from Upper Sherman and Mohawk, catch the bus, and has to go up to Upper James and Rimo. Takes her an hour and a half. She could probably walk there faster. It's the schedules. I know people say we don't have the ridership to increase the services because it costs more money. But if you put the service out there, maybe people would use the transit more. People get up here in the mountain, they use it a lot, especially going to Mohawk School. It has to be expanded and a better service. If downtown can get it, we can get it up here. And I'm not saying downtown shouldn't have it because I think they should. There's a lot of ridership down there. But even on the outside rural areas, why aren't they getting it? Some councilors don't want to pay for the service because they're saying it's not worth it. Their taxes will go up. But transit's going to be very important. So if we're going to build a city, we got to build it together. We just can't say we're going to have service in one area and not service in another area. How do these people get, if you have a business out in Ancaster, how does a person, from Stony Creek get there? Because that person doesn't want the bus service to, doesn't make sense to me. And roads is, I was saying about the infrastructure, some of the things in the roads is we keep filling potholes, keep filling them up. They get bigger and they get bigger. Sometimes we use concrete. Sometimes we use asphalt. Sometimes we use stone cold mix. If you look down on Barton Street there in that little area, I was even shocked to even find out the road could look like that. It does. Using some better material to make the roads last longer and have an oversight of, are these paving companies, when they're doing the roads, the resurfacing? There's many, many errors, and it happens right away. Those things are supposed to be under an insurance program or like a warranty program, and nobody can even report it. Nothing happens. So if we don't have that, then you don't have the proper bicycle lanes. You don't have the proper walkable methods. If you walk a lot of these places on the crosswalks up here in the mountain, you'll find a lot of potholes where people are actually stumbling, especially the older people with their buggies, just trying to get out of that rut. So I think better service has to be there, and there has to be somebody that's in charge of looking around this stuff and reporting it and getting it done in a timely fashion.
It's 2026. The public record is writing a review of the four-year council term that is just ending. What three words do you hope we will use to describe your term on council, and what three words do you hope will describe council as a whole?
Implementation of great ideas, listening to the community, and make progressive changes for the better.
Thank you. That's the end of the prepared questions you were sent in advance. Do you have any closing remarks that you wish to share?
I would really like to see, and all the people that are running are very good people. They have good intentions. And I just hope the next council, wherever the voters choose, will work together as a team and get the city to move forward and making sure nobody's left behind. I think those are very, very important issues to look at.
And how do people find out more about your platform and get in touch with you?
You can go on Facebook. You can go on Twitter. I will bring in, personal information, hard copies, door to door on my platform. You can contact me right now at sdeval7@gmail.com. And we'll be having a number put up very, very shortly when I put out my information that I can contact me by telephone or by email. I will be working out of my house. I am not going to be getting an office. I just find that just too great for money for these elections that people want for a couple months. So I'll be reachable. I will make sure I contact you back and return that call as quickly as possible.
This has been episode 128 of the Public Records, the 155 podcast. Thank you to the Hamilton Public Library for the use of their makerspaces to record these podcasts. Thank you to the readers and listeners of the Public Record for your support. You can visit thepublicrecord.ca to get more City Hall coverage, sign up for my City Hall newsletter, and become a member of the Press Club to keep me covering Hamilton City Hall. Thank you.